Welcome to another edition of We the People. Your regular host, Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff, are away this week. And we have our special guest host in joining us today, Vint Stevenson. Vint, I'll let you take it from here, and you can tell listeners who aren't familiar with you what you're all about.
All right. I appreciate it, Bob. Thanks. Hey, guys, first let me throw out a big thank you to Aaron and Bill for allowing us to have this spot. I think it allowed them to get away for a while, which is a good thing. Last time I heard from Aaron, she was test driving Kubotas somewhere. So shout out to Aaron. Thanks again, and we'll do the best we can. What we're going to spend a couple hours doing today is looking deep into our souls, our community soul, and trying to figure out exactly who we are and where we stand at the moment. That's a very important question for a lot of people right now, because there are a lot of people who really haven't paid attention, and I will throw myself in that bucket. I obviously was focused on my family. I was focused on business, taking care of things that, you know, obviously our everyday activities require and force us to endure. And I really wasn't paying attention to what was happening within our community. Well, a couple of years ago, I actually began to wake up and realize that, you know, everything wasn't as peachy as it was being proclaimed to be. It was being portrayed as a, you know, work in progress, and we've got this, don't worry about it. Well, as a financial planner and a person who has clients that are going to rely on this community and the obligation of the unfunded pensions and all the other things that are going on, I begin to realize that they don't have it. And quite frankly, it's not only at a point where it's truly unsustainable. And maybe we'll do a counting game and see how many times today in the next 2 hours we can use the word unsustainable. Because that's going to be something that really is going to be driven home. Because if everybody was here, and when I say everybody, I mean city council members and city managers and finance department and so on, and we are all in the room together, that is a word that we would all have to agree on. That would be an absolute that we could then begin to kind of build our arguments and our expectations off of, because we truly are in an unsustainable environment right now. Our budget, our expectations, our projections, they're all very, very negative. And this is something that we'll be deficit spending, as City Manager Barry Tippin proclaimed to the council members and has also made very clear in a number of different other scenarios and situations that we are going to be deficit spending. Originally, he had said that it looked like about 16 months. Well, that was 2 or 3 months ago. So we're down to about 12, 13 months. So basically this time next year, we're going to be looking at the books. And that's if nothing happens, nothing additional negative. Now, for those of you who follow the market, this is the third largest bull market we've ever had in our history. So most of you are very aware of the fact that we have a nice adjustment. Seems like within every decade, we're at that point. It could happen anytime. And, you know, with basic information that comes across every single day from Washington, D.C., and from our very objective media sources, they're out there telling us daily that, you know, this tax isn't going to pass and the health care is going to fall through and this person's selling off assets to foreign nations, and all these things are obviously building up. All these things are putting us in a position to where it could actually cause an adjustment just about at any given time. So what would happen with that adjustment? What would the impacts be? Well, that's a guess for many people. For those of us who look into it daily and are portraying this activity, it's something that we definitely see as a negative, and it's something that could set us in a negative trend that could cause a very significant adjustment in the market. So what would that do to our obligation? Well, that would obviously exacerbate it. That would make it worse. That would put us in a scenario where we'd be paying more. And what does more mean for a lot of people? Well, right now, you can absolutely lock in, bet your neighbor, do whatever it is that you feel comfortable doing, that we are going to pay at least $2.4 million more each year for the next 4 years. So $2.4 million next year, $4.8 million the next year, $7.2 million the next year, so on, when it comes to unfunded pensions, because we've got to catch up. We have to be able to basically say that we are making ground on a very large debt, this unfunded debt obligation. How big is it? Well, if we were going to pay it off over the next 30 years, it would be roughly $597 million. $597 million. I'm not sure how many people can really wrap themselves around that, how big that is and how much of a deterrent that's going to be. But you got to remember, if we are already in a situation where our obligations or our debt load and our budget is going into deficit spending, imagine adding another $2.4 million each year to that. That means our economy somehow either has to grow to meet that requirement, or we have to make some cuts. So what would you like to cut? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We need something. We need some business shot of adrenaline, or we need some serious cuts. For some of you, we may be talking about Chico. Chico, back in 2012, they made some cuts. They brought in a city manager that's what he was there for. He was a reform city manager. He was going to be there a short period of time, but his job was not to make friends. His job was to get that community back on track. Now, are they back on track and are they fiscally healthy? That's obviously an argument that we could have, but they're not as bad as we are. At least their projections aren't as bad. So where we would be deficit spending in 12 to 14 months, it sounds like they're going to be deficit spending in the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know, is it bad? Yes, but is it as bad as we are? No, it's not. So let's basically break this down in a couple different ways. Let's talk about where we are in this first half hour. Talk about what we're experiencing, some of the things that you're being asked to endure on a daily basis. And then let's begin to kind of break down some of the mistakes that have been made. And you know what, guys? We're going to talk some of the things that we're going to potentially have to endure moving forward. What would bankruptcy look like? That's a word nobody likes to hear. But quite frankly, it's something that Stockton, Vallejo, a number of different cities have already gone through. And if you haven't heard yet, some of those cities are going to go through them again. So very difficult time for a lot of different communities. And there is a common denominator amongst a lot of these municipalities that are actually being forced to endure this, and that is unfunded pensions. So we're going to continue to talk about what that means. For a lot of you, the big issue around crime, where does the crime actually come into this? And what the connection is to the unfunded pensions and what we can do about them. So moving forward, let's do this. Let's just break it down pretty simply as to where we're at, where we are currently. Let's pull some statistics from anything from the city website to anywhere else you want to be. So if you're one of those amateur researchers out there that love to dig into things, this is your day. So give us a call at 605-4567, and we'll start digging into this one by one. So looking forward to it, guys. Soul, then it's just your body, then they go,
Now back to We the People and your special guest host, Bent Stevenson.
Hey, guys. I got somebody in the studio with me, Robert Balky. You guys can blame him for everything. So go ahead, Robert.
It's all my fault.
Say hello to everybody.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Some of you guys would recognize him. He's normally wearing that green shirt, going around doing great things in the community. Part of Shasta Support Services.
Yep. Always involved in the community. That's what we're about.
That is an absolute understatement. Absolutely. All right, guys, we're gonna shift gears just a little bit. Some people have been asking a lot of questions lately around what are those people out there gathering signatures for? Now, I say that with a grain of salt because obviously for those that are paying attention and are focused on what's going on in the community and what people in the community are being asked to endure, they know it's the recall. They know it is a situation where Francie Sullivan and Kristen Schrader are being asked to step away and let some people in there that actually have the skills to make some changes that would be very positive and will help our community become more sustainable. There goes that unsustainable form again. That's like five already, isn't it, guys? Come on. So unsustainable. There's six. Basically, that's what the recall is about. But you know what? Let's talk about what it means to different people. Robert, why are you helping out with the recall?
Just for the simple fact of making the change in the community. I feel like leadership in the city of Reading needs change. We need some people that are going to step up and actually, you know, step up to the plate and do something. Less talk, more action would be great for me.
Outstanding. Yeah, and that seems to be a very consistent message. You've got a lot of people right now that are, you know, basically hearing that so much is going on or that people are participating, but we don't see it. We don't, you know, and I don't mean it's just behind the scenes happening because there is some happening. I'll give credit where credit is due. But quite frankly, for the longest time, it was very little, if anything.
Right.
A real special and strong message that was sent pretty consistently that was became a very sensitive area for a lot of us was studies. Let's study it. Study it. How much is that going to cost? Oh, only $150,000, something like that.
No big deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you're handing out raises to, you know, some city managers and so on at the pace of about four every 18 months,
right?
Then you know, yeah,
it's
they're
no
already
big deal.
They're all making, you know, $150,000, $250,000, $200,000. You know, what's $150,000 to study something?
Right. It's nothing.
Yeah,
dropping a hat.
And then after we get the study done, well, what are we going to do with it?
Huh?
Can
Let's
anybody look
study
at it?
The study.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know what? Does anybody else want to study it? You can't. Forget it.
Yeah.
And that's
not
what.
You can't even look at it.
Yeah, you can't. You know what? Unless you sue us. Thank you, Record Searchlight. Unless you sue us, we're not even going to let you check this thing out. So, you know, this is kind of what we're up against right now, guys. The idea of bad optics has been taken to an absolute new level. So let's imagine that we've put out a measure D and E, we'll call them.
Right.
And we'll say, we want more money out of your pocket. We haven't learned to budget correctly. We haven't learned to actually do things that are impactful, that will address some of the issues that you as citizens are going through. But we want more of your money,
yeah,
so
please.
Maybe we'll figure it out. And then after the taxpayers say no, a resounding no, you know, 66% or whatever it was, no. Then they say, well, you know what? One week after, they say, you know what? Let's give our managers a raise then.
Let's give $1,000 a month raise.
We'll teach those taxpayers a lesson or two. We'll give raises. That's a good idea.
We'll get money out of them no matter what.
So what does that mean as a taxpayer in this community? What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it just pisses me off, really. It just makes me mad. Like, let's just be honest.
If you haven't been listening, prior to us coming on, they had another group that was in here, and they were all talking about the impacts of the Wiener conviction and the fact that he's going to jail and what he's probably going to experience why he's in jail. And it basically just cracked me up listening to, you know, all the things that they thought of. But you could tell that there was – there was some anger behind it.
Right.
And basically that's what, I'm not sure if you, did you sense that from people that were coming up to and signing the?
Oh, yeah, signing the petitions. Yeah, they're mad. They're not happy with the way City of Reading is conducting, you know, business. They're ready for change.
Isn't it fascinating? Now, what do you see that, like, let's say, what's another, how about Anderson?
Mm-hmm.
Anderson's a good example of a different flip to this, basically a 180.
Right.
So tell me some things at Anderson, what they're doing down there that looks good.
Oh, I mean, the list is really endless. I've had to come to the point where I've had to tell people I don't like to compare Reading to Anderson anymore because it's like apples to oranges.
Do it anyway.
Yeah, do it anyways. Anderson's on the ball. Like we've got city council, we've got Baron Browning is our mayor, and he puts up with nothing. He's there to make Anderson, you know, the
former Jarhead though.
he's there to make Anderson a great place, a great community. He wants to clean up any issues. APD, you know, they don't mess around either. They're everywhere doing everything involved.
Mike Johnson.
With everything. Yeah, they were at the, what was it, the Harvest Festival type mm-hmm. thing at the school, you know, with the kids and canine demonstrations. You know, Anderson's just, they're really involved. City Council is really involved. We have City Council members from Anderson that come to our cleanups for Shasta Support Service.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course, you know, supervisors as well. But, We don't have anybody from Reading City Council coming to do cleanups or safety walks or, you know, involved in the community with our volunteer aspects.
Would you consider them transparent?
Yeah.
Would you consider them accountable?
Definitely. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
This is what I'm basically getting at is there are a lot of things going on, but you know what? We can narrow it down to a couple things that are tremendous issues for us. When it comes to Reading currently and what we've been experiencing over the last couple of years, we have a transparency and accountability issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will say, well, you know, we could still do good things with this. This is what exactly leads to a lack of trust. Because all you have to do is make one mistake, whether that was intentional or not.
Right.
And you, if you're living in an environment where you don't allow transparency and you don't see the accountability that's necessary, then all of a sudden you begin to believe that everything is happening in the back room. If I went out right now, what do you think the percentage would be out there on the sidewalk if I asked 10 people, is the city leadership, are they doing things behind the scenes that we don't get to see? What do you think the percentage would be that would say absolutely yes?
No, I bet it's a high percentage. 90%, I would say, yeah. And then 10% probably don't even have any clue what the leadership is.
The other one's really focused on that marijuana law and whether or not they're going to get things
exactly.
done. So,
yeah,
and even that might be going on behind the scenes. So, yeah. So the simple fact is when it comes to these kinds of things, everything really comes down to that. You know what? If Barry Tippin were in the room right now with us and he was saying, you know what, we have to do this because, and making it very clear and basically showing us what's behind the curtain and helping us understand that we're going to be devastated. We're at a point right at the moment where if we do not make some adjustments and we do not do these things, we're unsustainable. There's like number
right.
eight. If we don't do these things, we're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think people would be much more receptive to the idea of, oh, okay, now I see why you got to do it. And I see we're forced to do it. It's not like you want to do it or you're trying to do it for, you know, some ulterior motive or some agenda that you've got. This is just self-survival at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to throw one of the people off the raft. Well, it's not because, you know, we want that person's, voice to be maybe not heard anymore, which might be the case. But no, it's just basically we only have so much to go around. And I use this analogy because that's kind of where we're at, ladies and gentlemen. If you're out there listening, we have a limited budget. We know that budget is going to be less than what is required or more than what is actually available in the city coffers.
Right.
So we're going to be at a point where we're going to be deficit spending, and it's
mm-hmm.
going to happen within the next 13 months, and we're done. That's
yeah,
it. So basically, there's some people that are in the life raft right now that have to go. And
yep.
So, you know what? We're at that point where we're going to have to decide because our ability to ramp up our business, to fill up Stillwater Business Park overnight, that's probably not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. So
no,
you know what? Those are your two options. Don't look for Sacramento to solve, because, quite frankly, they've got hundreds of billions in unfunded pensions.
Right.
Don't look for the national government, or, you know, don't you dare, if you're out there and you wear blue, don't ask for Trump to help you, because that's not going to happen. And let's be fair. I mean, they've got a $6, $7 trillion problem of their own. To let you know how bad this is, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which for a lot of you is your safety net, that is your insurance company that guarantees pensions, they say that they've got another 6 to 7 years left, and then they're going under.
Oh, well.
So this is a problem that's ramping up on a lot of different people. So, I mean, we're at that point, guys, where it's time to basically circle the wagons, realize that we're going to have to solve for ourselves. It's going to take everyone. It's going to take compromise. It's going to take everyone realizing you're not going to get everything you want, period.
Right.
So now how do we make sure the ship stays afloat? So then we can save as many people as we possibly can. That's it. That's the basic premise behind this. So recall. Recall was put out there for a couple of different reasons. One, to basically set the tone that, you know what, we're in a bad situation. We need help. We need it immediately. We have a trust issue. So we want accountability. We want transparency. We have two initiatives that will be introduced this year for the ballot. One is the REU Advisory Council, bringing it back, but bringing it back in a different way. You might ask, who got rid of it? Well, look at the recall ballot. You'll see exactly who got rid of it. So basically, the idea is to bring it back, but bring it back with some teeth. So this isn't going to be mom and dad's REU Advisory Council. This is going to be an REU Advisory Council that has a voice and has some bite behind it. Quite frankly, we're at a stage where that municipality needs to be for the people and by the people. It belongs to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? We're going to bring it back with some power. Secondly, we're going to bring in the COIN initiative. These are all things that you can vote for to give yourself transparency and accountability. The COIN initiative is a requirement that all labor negotiations happen in open session. So for those of you who are untrusting and refuse to believe that they're doing anything that is in your best interest, when they obligate you, they're going to have to do it in open session. So if you take a little time away from your Bonanza reruns and some of the other things that you're doing, you can come on down and you can listen to them as they negotiate those things. These are things that are a must. The pendulum has swung so far towards one side that people do not trust anymore.
Right.
And so we're going to have to allow it to naturally swing back, and it's going to swing pretty far. And then hopefully at some point we'll settle in the middle. But at this stage, trust is gone, and we're going to have to rebuild it. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, we're doing our best. So when it comes to the recall itself, why do you think people are – there's obviously a group out there that's bucking the system. What's your thoughts? What do you think is the reason they're bucking? Why are they putting up a headwind?
I think their biggest headwind against the recall.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to say cost.
Okay.
You know, I think that's the biggest thing that I've heard out gathering signatures and talking to people is, well, what's it going to cost? You know, we've got the two recall candidates that we are trying to take out of city council or putting out there that it'll cost $200,000, $250,000, $287,000. I mean, really, I don't think they have a clue what it will cost, but they've put out that number as a scare tactic, and it's worked for a percentage of people. And until you're able to sit down and talk with them and really talk numbers with them and say, you know, $200,000, even if it did cost $200,000, really, it's not that much considering what they've spent on nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I say just keep pushing forward. The recall is going to happen.
Well, the budget that was passed in July, the new one that was initiated, it went up $7.4 million, I believe it was, $7.4 or $7.6. So if you broke that down for every 2 weeks, and I used every 2 weeks because that's city council meetings are every 2 weeks. If you broke it down, it would only take 2 weeks, and it would be paid for. So seems like a small, reasonable price to pay.
Looks like a win.
There you go. But the other part is when you begin to break down their numbers, I mean, you've got a lot of people from the county that the city would then have to refer, you know, give that money back to. basically, they are on salary anyway. They're going to be full-time employees anyway. So you're going to pay those people anyway. Now, are they taken away from their other duties to work on this? Yeah, but that is part of their duty. So,
right.
You know, when it comes to breaking down that cost, and then the idea of maybe doing a mail-in ballot, well, that's, you know, $30,000, $40,000.
Right.
So that doesn't really look at that $200,000 mark. So, yeah, I mean, there's a number of things that we look at. But the premise is, if that's the only thing that is holding you back from supporting putting good people in office that can do the job, then you really have to search your soul.
Right.
Because quite frankly, guys, we're in deep trouble. We need changes right now. And you're saying $200,000 is too much.
Right.
Well, did you say that when they spent $155,000 on a study?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that when they were spending $1 million a year just keeping a empty business park alive? Did you say that when they gave money to the parks a raise of $1,000 a month?
Did
you? I mean, I could do this all day long.
Mm-hmm.
The number of things that they've spent money on and approved for, things that there was no way we were going to be able to afford them. Now we're taking donations from churches, from casinos, from anything, and don't get me wrong, guys. I'm going to put this disclaimer in there right now. I appreciate what these institutions are doing to try
right.
to help.
Mm-hmm.
They're all on board, and they're trying to get it done. And as long as there's no, you know, deal behind the scene, here we go, in back room
deals.
I'm totally good with these contributions. But the simple fact is, guys, it's time to search your souls and realize what it is we're trying to accomplish and why. So let's bring it back up after the break.
You're listening to We the People. Special guest host Vint Stevenson in for Aaron and Bill today here on AM 1460 KCNR.
A lady that I know just came from Colombia. She smiled because I did not understand. Then she held out some marijuana. She said it was the best in all the land. And I said, no, 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 I don't smoke it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. No thank you please, it only makes me sneeze. Then it makes it hard to find a door.
Hey guys, hey, we left off with a couple things on the recall. I wanted to follow up a little bit and just kind of make sure that everyone's on the same page. Again, we get asked a lot as to why or why not. What are the issues behind the recall and why did we start it from the beginning? All those kinds of great things. But the simple fact is, we looked at the people who were on the council currently. We looked at the activity and the actions that they had been given, and then we looked at, all right, what are the areas that we could make the biggest impact in? We have some people who have worked, for the most part, their entire lives in some form of public service, which is, you know, fantastic, good for you. But quite frankly, we looked at it more from the perspective of a CEO. Are the people that you have managing for you, are they people who are well-equipped to do the job? And quite frankly, we found that there were at least two that were not equipped, that did not have what we felt was the proper skills to deal with this. We needed business people. We needed people who have become accustomed and have it as a second nature to balance the budget, to hire people and understand what it is that they're looking for as far as the skills, and don't feel like their only tool is to give more raises or to offer more than any other municipality. Quite frankly, we're at a point where we can't afford to compete that way. So we looked at that and understood that, you know what, there's a couple people that probably should leave and allow some people in that can do some real solid work and put us back on a sustainable mechanism. And that's I'm gonna mark that as number 10 because sustainable and unsustainable, we're gonna use them pretty consistently together. And then the last part was, I just wanted to make sure everyone understood this is nothing personal about these people. If they happen to be good friends, we're a small community, so a lot of these people are friends, are people that we've participated in a lot of groups and so on. It would be like somebody coming up to you at your job and saying, you know what, I'm sorry, you're just not doing a good enough job. Nothing personal, but I'm going to have to replace you with somebody who I feel like can do the job. And, you know, that's basically the premise. And in this case, we have two people that, nothing personal, but you need to go. So we've got some business people who are stepping up, some people who basically have a great understanding as to what's needed, and we feel like they have the fortitude to make things happen and make some changes occur. We heard the misogyny argument thrown out there quite a bit.
Right.
You know, you're only picking on them because they're ladies. Well, some of the candidates that are now stepping up, guess what? They're ladies themselves, but they're also business people, and they're also people who balance budgets and so on. So your argument kind of, it's just lame. All right, so let's just make it clear. The simple fact is, guys, we need some changes. We need them quick if we're going to save this. Now, what happens if we don't make changes? Well, I brought in, some of you already know him, Michael DeQuisto. He is an attorney here in town, and we're going to talk about worst-case scenario. Worst-case scenario, Mike, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad you brought me in on the worst-case scenario.
Appreciate that.
It's a heck of a way to start your show.
Tell us about a municipal bankruptcy.
So just for a little bit of background, I've been a bankruptcy trustee since 1997, and I've had my own business and worked in that business for a long time. Bankruptcy basically is two separate forms. One is you sell the property and use the money to pay the creditors. The other form in general is that you take your income that you have coming in and you work out a different plan to pay your creditors. And a municipal bankruptcy would be the second type of bankruptcy. You wouldn't sell the property. You would just give the entity time to rework its contracts. The principal contract that you have a problem with, and the reason these municipal bankruptcies have been filed up to now, are the unfunded pensions. And the heart of the dispute in those matters is CalPERS. And CalPERS' position is, we are a separate governmental entity. We're like the state. And therefore, we have certain rights that the bankruptcy court is not allowed to mess with or to change. And the position of the cities is, no, the bankruptcy court has the ability to essentially rewrite any contract in the world. And it can go do that. And so people say, well, how can you rewrite a contract? Well, in Chapter 11 cases where a business files and they want to change what they owe and do this and that, judges rewrite contracts all the time. In Chapter 7 cases, if you have a second on your house and it's underwater, judges will say, hey, it's gone. The second doesn't exist anymore. There's no security interest. So these judges do this every day of the week. In the most recent case, in the Stockton case, mm-hmm. It was filed in Sacramento. And the judge who heard it is Judge Christopher Klein. He's a very smart judge, and I've been in front of him many times. And one of the principal arguments of PERS was, we're a sovereign entity. You can't do anything to us. And Judge Klein said, no, I don't quite buy that. The federal law trumps the state law. Then they said, you can't rewrite our contract because of some other provisions in the state law. And he says, no, we rewrite contracts all the time, so I can do that too. And then they said, well, there's a provision in the state law that says if you buy out of PERS, they get a lien on all your property to make sure you pay them. And he said, well, you may get a lien, but in bankruptcy law, we have a provision to wipe that lien out and make you unsecured. So basically, he said to PERS, I don't buy any of your arguments. I have the right to do all these things, and at least as I view it. And that's in a published decision. Now, it's a trial court decision, but it's there. To my knowledge, it hasn't been challenged or taken up to an appellate court level yet. Anywhere across the country.
Now, Mike, if I read that correctly, and I did read that particular ruling, he also made a reference to the fact that even though the municipality did not ask for forgiveness on those levels for the unfunded pension portion and so on, that he made it clear that they could have.
He did. When they talk about rewriting a contract, it's basically one is it's a settlement tool, because when he writes that, he's then hoping that PERS and the city will come to a settlement because he's showing his card, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But when they rewrite a contract, you can start with a whole blank slate. Other than having the same parties, you can change terms, you can change dates, you can change interest rates, you can change amounts owed, you can change all kinds of things.
Now, speaking of changing all kinds of things and courts, the Supreme Court, they have a couple situations up in front of them. Basically driven from a lot from San Diego. So San Diego came out a number of years back, I think it was 5 years back, and said, we're going to change the pension program going forward. And obviously the unions and CalPERS stepped up and said, oh, no, you can't do that. We have a California rule, the infamous California rule that says once you signed a once that person went to work for you, that's their contract moving forward and you can't change it. Well, the courts obviously on the lower level said, absolutely you can, as long as there's, you know, taking consideration what it is that you're doing for the employee and so on, and it's in the best interest, yes, you can. That is now being challenged. It's going all the way up. I'm hearing from a number of different people that Supreme Court's going to rule that it absolutely is going to be upheld, and San Diego is going to be able to switch from the pension to a 401k or somewhere on that premise, and the California rule is not going to apply the way it always has or has been in the past. Is that your understanding?
Generally speaking, it is. That would be a decision under state law, which would be unrelated to the bankruptcy view of the world, because the bankruptcy judge says CalPERS asserted that argument that we've got this state rule and you can't change it and this and that. And he said, yes, we can, because in the Constitution it says bankruptcy is a federal matter to be governed by the federal government, not the state government. So he said that's the supremacy clause, essentially, and you know, nice try, but I'm not going to buy that particular argument. But what Judge Klein also did in the Stockton case is that he said, even though I find I have the right and ability to do all these things, and CalPERS, you're wrong, however, the whole plan that you've presented, that's been presented to us, that's just one part of it. And I find that the whole plan in and of itself is a good plan, and that's the way life goes. So I'm going to approve it.
Well, and you've got a lot of bond companies out there that they have big attorneys too.
Well,
and at some point they're going to say, you know what, we don't want to take all the weight. We want to share that with CalPERS. And we think you got to be written down as well. So, hey, let's take a real quick one. Let's go to Billy Bob in Palo Cedro, PC, my hometown. Billy Bob, can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. What's up, brother?
Hey, great show. I'm very interested in what you guys are talking about. I can't believe the amount of corruption that's involved with all this, and so anyway, my only point is that when can we, as the city of Reading, decide that with this recall and everything else, all those guys, every one of them, ought to be shit canned. I'm sorry, but they're worthless. They're worthless creatures. They get paid $500 a month to screw us up. So anyway, that's my only thing I wanted to say. So
thanks, Billy Bob. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Well, yeah, that puts it pretty plainly. I think the simple fact is we're gonna go at this in pieces to answer your question, Billy Bob. Like we talked about with bankruptcy or the recall or anything, it's got to be done in a slow, methodical, well thought out way, right, to get us to a point where we can actually make the necessary changes. Back to bankruptcy, Mike, talk to us about what kind of things are actually considered. So let's imagine we have it up in front of the council. They need to vote on it. What are the things that what are they going to consider?
There's several requirements initially before you can even file. One is you have to be a municipality, which the city meets that requirement. Then it's got to be authorized by the city council by a vote. So that those were basically technical requirements that they would do. One of the big ones that you have to show is that you are insolvent.
Okay.
And there's magic, as in every law, there's words that describe it. But insolvency basically means that you either are not paying your debts as they come due, or you can't pay the debts as they come due. So, for instance, if you've got 12 months before we're deficit spending, do you have to be in deficit spending before you're insolvent? And one of the arguments PERS would make is that you're not insolvent yet, so you can't file. Mm-hmm. You're not eligible to file. If they win that just means you wait 6 months till you're not making your debts, and you go back again, and you go, okay, now I'm not paying them. Now I'm really insolvent. So that's not a... I call that a technical argument, not a substantive argument.
Okay.
And then when you say, why are you in, what does insolvent mean? If it means you can't pay your debts as they come due, you would look at the budget, and it's a simple numbers thing. You say, this is how much money comes in. This is my general fund obligation. These are my specific segregated fund obligations. What can I pay? What can I not pay? you know, they may say that the segregated funds aren't insolvent because there is enough money in there to pay those, but the general fund is insolvent, so does that mean the city's insolvent? And I mean, there's a lot of legal questions that you can get into.
Speaking of all these legal questions, what's this going to cost the city?
It's an open checkbook.
Yeah.
Being realistic, the lawyers will get it, and they'll tell them essentially in more complicated terms than what I'm saying is that we don't really know. There's a lot of unknown questions, and do you want to be the first one to go fight and find out? And the heart of the dispute or the problem is that the cities, by the time they can file, don't have the money to fight PERS, and they wind up losing. And so then you rely on the bond companies and some of these other ones.
Yeah.
And the bond company actually took an appeal on the Stockton case, and they said no. Because the whole plan was approved by the judge, it was all reasonable, and the fact that you don't like the outcome is so sad, too bad. You don't get to win.
Well, speaking of breaking away from things, let's take a break right now, and we'll come back, and we'll talk more about bankruptcy.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Ben Stevenson is our special guest host this morning, and you're hearing it on AM 1460 KCNR. Now back to We the People and our special guest host, Vince Stevenson.
Hey, guys. Let's bridge this a little bit more. When we left, we were talking about what we'd have to do to move the things forward on a bankruptcy if it ever got to that point. Hopefully we'll come up with a magical Pegasus who will fly us off to a land where we get all of our stuff paid for, and it'll all be great.
Let me just say, I'm not advocating they file bankruptcy. I mean,
oh, no.
It just gives some general...
No, we're just talking about all the what ifs. What would happen if we had to? And basically that's the idea, guys. I mean, at this stage, I had somebody come up to me in the last few days and they said, "All right, so what about the marijuana idea? Should we be thinking about that?" And I said, "Well, you know, how would that work?" And they were like totally amazed, like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that you think that that's a consideration." And I said, "You know what? Do you realize the condition of our community right now? Our community is in trouble. So, you know what? Whatever the idea is, it can't be immediately excluded. Outside of selling our children, everything else is on the table, guys. And so basically, we're at a stage right now where, all right, so how much is the marijuana thing going to bring in, and how could we control it, and what can we do? I'm not saying I'm voting for it, but at the same time, I'm not saying I'm going to eliminate it right from the beginning either. And that's what we're doing today, is we're actually looking at some of these things like bankruptcy and saying, all right, what would that look like? How much would it hurt? We've decided to do this. The rumor's out there. What's it going to mean to our credit? What kind of things, if we did make this happen, would it have really any impact? It's one thing to have a bankruptcy where you have a significant event that actually caused it to occur. We had a big fire, you had an earthquake, you had whatever. And now you're having to find ways to wipe out that debt. It's something else when it's just poor spending and you're continually overspending past your budget. Well, guess what? There's only one real way to solve that kind of an issue. So, you know, so Mike.
Well, I see people in bankruptcy all the time, and they're in many. Let's take a medical situation where somebody gets sick, mm-hmm. which isn't their fault, and they're off work for 6 months, so they have no income coming in, and they want to use. They want to pay the medical providers because they're helping them, so they use their credit cards. And the next thing you know, they've got $40,000 or $50,000 run up on their credit cards, and they can barely afford the minimum payments. So bankruptcy is designed for people like that who have a one-time, unexpected situation, and they say you can wipe out your debt and be done with it. But then you get people who just spend more than they can afford, and they do it continually, and they wind up in the same situation, but not from a one-time unfortunate event. And to those people, you want to say from a financial planning basis, can you change the behavior that's caused this to occur?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, then bankruptcy is an answer. If you can't, you'll just be coming back to bankruptcy again and again and again. And so you look at the city and you say, what has created these problems? It's really negotiation. It's what it's been over time, I think. And so you need to change some of the negotiations.
Sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? For those of you out there listening, here's a situation where it was just bad stuff, bad decisions. We're going to catch you after the hour. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Stay tuned for hour number two of We the People. Again, Ben Stevenson is sitting in for your regular hosts, Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff today. Bob Martin inviting you to keep it here for more of We the People on AM 1460, KCNR, Shasta Redding. Welcome back to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR, and those of you listening worldwide at KCNR1460.com. Aaron and Ryan and Bill Cundiff are your regular hosts. They are away this week, and in their place, our special guest talking about the upcoming recall or the current recall drive going on in Redding, California, and all things related. Vint Stevenson, welcome back, Vint.
Thanks, Bob. Hey, and let me throw out another thank you to Aaron and Bill, wherever you guys are, relaxing, kicking back. I'm sure you're not watching NFL. But hey, thanks again for letting us have this time. And let me put out a real quick plug for those people who realize or are beginning to realize or have realized and now want to figure out what they can do to help. Go out to ShastaCountyRecall.com. Shasta County Recall, all one word. ShastaCountyRecall.com, and it'll give you some ideas, answer some questions for you, so on. And you can also go out to CrowdPack, and go to the little magnifying glass and click on that and put in Shasta, and it'll pop up, and you'll see Kristen Schrader and Francie Sullivan's smiling faces, and with a big old word recall next to them, and go ahead and contribute, because you know, as our society is, nothing happens without pushing it with a dollar. So whether it's radio ads or print ads or the mailers, all this stuff is coming out this month, and we need help. So do your part. I know this is a fantastic giving community when it comes to filling trucks for fire victims and doing things for underprivileged and so on. This community has never let us down. Amazing. Thank you again for all the things you guys do for the veterans. But here's a situation where, you know what, help yourselves. Dig in deep and give what you can. Go out to CrowdPack and search Shasta County, and let's get this done. And if you're out and about today and you listen to us on the radio, drive through the back alley. Come through here between KCNR, right where the restaurant is here on the corner of Market and what is this street right here?
It's the corner of Market and Shasta. Shasta, you're referring to Kobe Restaurant,
yep.
That corner, and you actually need to enter the alley off of Shasta. It's a one-way alley.
Come in there, and we've got some people out there that will gather your signature for you and get you out the other side, and you can go forward with your Sunday and know that you did your part, and you took a big step for our community to get this thing sustainable. Let's talk about this community. I've got in here with me, besides Bob, who keeps us all in check, I've got Mike DeQuisto and Robert Balky in here with us, and we're talking about our community. This is us, guys. This is the United Shasta. You can call it a number of different things, but quite frankly, it is our community. And nobody's going to solve this for us. And obviously, the people who have been doing it, who have had the voices, have done let's just put it clearly, poor job. And we now find ourselves in a situation where we're having to talk about a lot of things that we never thought we'd want to ever talk about or didn't think we'd ever be talking about. But quite frankly, we made some poor decisions, and now here we are. So you know what, guys? Throw out some statistics for me. What are some things that you know about this community and about what we're being asked to endure or what the people out there are being asked to endure? What do you guys know? Wow, did you hear that silence? Oh my God, it's deafening.
Where do you start?
That's what I was thinking.
Let's start with crime. Crime would be a good one.
That's such a general.
Anybody know some general statistics? Here's one, guys. If you're out there and you're one of those amateur researchers and you love to dig in things, do a search and put out crime and then Redding, California, and statistics. And just see what it pops up. Now, there's at least five. There's four that I know of that I've already done. And these are groups that, let's imagine you're moving to another part of the community, or another part of the country, excuse me, and you are deciding where you want to move to. You can put in a city and then put in crime next to it, and it'll tell you what the schools are like, what the crime levels are like. Is it a positive trend or a negative trend? Is it, you know, property crimes or violent crimes? I mean, it tells you all these different things, and then it gives your city a rating, and it basically says, yes, you should probably consider living there, or no. Keep on looking. Well, guess what, guys? We're a keep-on-looking type city right now. Basically, when it comes to property values, taxes, schools, crime rates, so on, it's trending negative. And so go out there and do your own research and look at that. For some of you who are looking for other areas to look for, go out to ReadingTownHall.com. ReadingTownHall.com, and you'll see salary levels, a lot of different things. All the things that are on ReadingTownHall.com are statistics, and they're all sourced. And so they all come from either the Redding, California city site or the Shasta County site. But these are spot-on statistics that are public domain, and you can go out there and you can trust what you're looking at. So when it comes to things like our current statistics with crime and so on, I mean, what do we do at this point, guys? Give me some ideas. What are some things at this stage when we look at crime levels? What do you see as possibilities?
Well, I'll tell you. When I ran for city council 4 years ago, or two, well, in the same election that the people are being recalled from, and I came in fourth, so I didn't get on. And that's fine. But one of the things that I learned from that was in talking to Chief Paletti, and he said, because it's the old chicken and egg, which is the jail versus getting arrested. And if you arrest them, where do you put them? And there isn't one answer to solve the whole problem. But what Chief Paletti said is if you aggravate the right people enough, they will go somewhere else and they won't want to hang around, even just getting busted. They don't like it.
Right.
So that, I think, needs to be shown more by RPD. And I think they are recently.
I do too, Mike.
I think they're doing a great job recently.
Roger Moore's doing a great job.
And I have, you know, you can say, well, why is he doing it? And that doesn't, I'm not sure what that accomplishes as to whether they're doing it because of the recall or because it's the right thing to do. But the point is they're doing it, and it is the right thing. And I congratulate them for it. I think they should do it. They should continue to do it. And how should they do it? They should do it as often as they can. Mm-hmm. If they could do it every day for 90 days, I think it would make a big difference.
It would make a huge difference.
I think it would make a big difference.
Yeah, we're along in here. I introduced earlier Robert Balky. Their group, Shasta Support Services, goes out and does some fantastic stuff. But having gone with them a couple times, I got a kick out of the fact that these people were so entitled that they were upset that the group was down there cleaning up.
Right.
I mean, for those of you who don't know me, if you ever decide you want to come to my house and clean up my house, you are very welcome. I might even make you some Black Rifle coffee. I'll sit and watch you. And hey, we'll have a great old time. Great conversation. So to the thought that they would just, if it were me down there, I'd roll over and get out of the way and say, hey, how about this spot right here?
Right.
This is, you know, don't miss this one. But they were upset. I mean, they were yelling at us and profanities and, you know, so on as they were shooting up and doing the other things. But I mean, quite frankly, I recently heard from somebody who says they're out there in the community and they're a leader, they're a community leader, and she's talking about, I'm starting to narrow it down now, she's talking about how this is a homegrown problem. Well, you know what? For somebody who proclaims to travel and get out there and be a part of other communities and see what else is going on, that's a pretty lame statement. This is not a homegrown problem as much as it is in San Diego or L.A. or San Luis Obispo or San Francisco. If you guys haven't been to some of these cities recently, oh my. They got problems too. And quite frankly, I'm sorry for what the problems that they're going through right now. San Diego, they've got a hepatitis A problem.
Right.
I mean, what would it feel like to be going out to brunch on a Sunday with your buddies and your girls or, you know, your spouses, and you go, oh God, what's the guy in the DEFCON suit going over there? What's
the,
you know,
hazmat suit?
The hazmat suit. He's like spraying down the sidewalk in front of you, you know? Wow, this is fantastic. I think they're up to 18 deaths, something like that. They've had 400 or 500 people who have actually been hospitalized. I mean, this is just amazing, guys. I mean, come on. And we're still going to be this sanctuary area, and we're still going to do all these wonderful things. At some point, you got to realize you've been listening to the same group of people, these same voices for such a long time, and look where it got you. All right? You listen to the same voices, you're going to get the same results. That's all there is to it. These people are pushing this hard, and quite frankly, even in these huge stacks of evidence in front of them, these amazing levels of facts, they still will not begin to embrace and realize they've made a mistake.
Right.
And so this is a crazy thing. So, all right, so we've got some issues taken care of with, you know, just putting some pressure on them and chasing them from one. I think talking to Rob back in the day, he used to call it like the balloon idea.
Yeah.
You squeeze a balloon and they'll go the other directions, and then you squeeze that part of the balloon. And if you're in the studio, I'm actually doing it with my hands. Sorry, guys, I got to talk that way. What else, guys? What else? What other things can we do on crime? Just crime.
On crime. I mean, just more officers, I think, really. That would help quite a bit. I mean, look at the crime just in Shasta County is ridiculous. I mean, they're saying, just a quick Google search from our infamous record, Searchlight, says statewide there's about 426 violent crimes per 100,000. Here in Shasta County, there's 680. Per 100,000. I mean, we've got some issues.
Yeah.
You know, where's all that coming from? Is it coming from the local homegrown, as they would say, transient problem?
I think she's been smoking homegrown. I think that's what it is. So we got some big issues, guys, and we got them per 100,000. I mean, we statistics basically pan out that, you know, we've got this thing. More police can help with Mike, your idea of chasing them and, you know, pissing them off.
Make it uncomfortable.
Make it uncomfortable.
Make it uncomfortable.
So it takes away their comfort zone.
That's what you want to do.
I get that. At some point, we've got to talk sales, though. I mean, we got to talk beds.
Right.
How do we find this out? I keep coming back to, we went out, Robert came with me and the sheriff and a few others.
Mm-hmm.
We went out and we visited Crystal Creek. And
right.
Just looked at the absolute demolished area. I mean,
it was terrible.
They just tore that thing up. And you can blame the county or you can blame somebody for not watching over it or doing whatever. But quite frankly, they abandoned it because they didn't think they'd ever use it again.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's been turned over to the Parks Department and National Parks Department, and they want to put a campground in there and so on.
Yeah.
But you know what? You look at other avenues, and you can look at Sugar Pine. Sugar Pine is an area that they basically use for training low-level, low-security requirement inmates so they can fight fires. Well, guess what? We've got Prop 47, and we've got AB-109s, and we've got 57, I think it is.
Yep.
All these have basically moved a lot of those lower-security people out of prison. So they're not in prisons anymore. They're, guess what? They're in our jail and on our streets.
Right.
And so the idea, my thought is, and I actually called the attorney general and a couple others to try to figure out who I would actually speak to. But my thought is, I think we ought to have Sugar Pine. I think they ought to turn it over to the county. Why? Because it's the county who actually has those people.
Right.
So you know what? As you're contemplating that and as you're putting pen to paper and writing your local representatives and your state representatives, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Indeed. You're listening to We the People, our special guest host, Bent Stevenson, in for Aaron and Bill. You're welcome to call in at 530-605-4567 if you're listening live in the vicinity of Redding, California.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I'm
Welcome back to We the People. Now back to your special guest host, in for Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff today, Vint Stevenson.
Hey, guys. All right, hey, I'm going to throw this out there again. We've got the signature people gathering in the back. We have Crowd Pack out there. Go out to Crowd Pack and do a little search, so you know, that little magnifying glass out there for some of you. Put in Shasta, and it'll pop you up where we need to be. Or go out to ShastaCountyRecall.com, ShastaCountyRecall.com, and we'll definitely answer some questions for you. There's some frequent questions out there, so we'll get those answered for you. We were basically talking about a number of different things, but we had kind of gone down the path of solutions. Well, you know what? When people were looking around for solutions to our city issues, talking about some of the things we were being asked to endure, whether it be crime or budget issues or so on, there was a couple names that consistently came up. You've already heard from one of them, Mike DeQuisto. You're going to hear from the other one now. So when we're looking for solutions, there's certain types of people that we bring in, and today we're bringing in Aaron Reznor.
Good morning.
Welcome, Aaron.
Welcome. Thank you. I was going to say welcome also. Thanks for having me.
Great to be here. All right. So tell us, we're on the topic of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you got for us?
Well, I mean, there's a multitude of things that we could talk about. But I heard you guys earlier talking about jails, and I heard you talking about crime and all of those sort of things. I would love if we could get three more officers or community officers who are going in and tackling the illegal encampments. I think that if we were continually doing that, then it would either make them move along. I would like it to be coupled with two things, because I think that if you, similar to what some of you guys were saying before, if you're making it uneasy and it's difficult and it's a pain, most people who are doing something that they shouldn't do are going to go somewhere where they can be in the dark, where they can be left alone, that sort of thing. And I think that the other aspect of if there were some more officers or a community member or a community officer who was going in and assessing who is it who has mental health and addiction issues that really would like some help, mm-hmm. so that then we can point them in the direction of services. There are lots of different places around the country that have heroin problems like we do. That, I mean, I think all over the country there are places that have it really bad, and places where it's not quite as bad, but all over the place. And some of them have successful programs, and I think that we need to do a better job of looking at what some of those successful programs. I know that a little while ago we used to have a drug court. And a program where someone could go in. I would love if we could figure out a way to get a handful more of those pre-sentence beds, because you have, when we arrest someone and there are pre-sentence beds and post-sentence beds, we have something crazy like a 90% failure to appear
mm-hmm.
rate. So then we can't.
FTAs are amazingly costly.
Yes. And so we can't exactly get somebody into a program like that, or get them help that they maybe need, or put them into a path of being successful later on, unless we can get them to appear for a sentencing.
What about night court? Because night court was an idea that I threw at district attorney and other people. Basically, they said the judges would never go for it. They're judges union. They don't want to come in during the night. Quite frankly, I think we could get a group of people mm-hmm. to stand outside their house and bang drums and trash cans and so on to help them understand that that's not really an option, and they would probably have much more peace and quiet if we got them into the courtroom. The idea is, though, that when it comes, you bring up a great point, the FTAs, the failures mm-hmm. to appear.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to district attorneys and people who are sheriffs and so on, and it's amazing the number. These people just don't care. They just, I mean, you and I, if we had a summons to appear, you know, for whatever reason, we would be there. I mean, it would be important to us. They don't care. And so because they don't show up, then that means you've got city defenders and judges mm-hmm. and the court staff and all these people basically sitting on their hands doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And then that has to be rescheduled. And then we've got to put them on some kind of watch list out there and look for these people, Shasta's most wanted, because mm-hmm. most of them just didn't show up. That's basically their big issue. And so at some point, we've got to figure out how to put the pressure on them and make them be the ones, whether that be night court or that be some other way of saying, if you fail to appear, we're going to, I don't know, send you to Bakersfield. I don't know. I mean, there's got to be something that we come up with, guys, that helps put the pressure on. So.
They'll issue arrest warrants if you don't appear, but then somebody has to catch you, and they have to identify you and then correlate you with the warrant and then take you in. And then the person in the jail who's deciding who the most dangerous people are is going to say, well, this is just an FTA. See you later.
Catch and release.
If you guys ever get a chance, and these guys don't get a lot of credit, but the poor guys gals that work in the jail, I feel for those people because they've got to every day make this decision. And every day they've got to decide, you know what, all right, which ones are the lesser evils, and let's let those people out. And they've got a sheet. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. I was actually up at the courthouse one day, and somebody, well, a family member, it looks like, left one of these sheets. And when I say a family member, I mean a family member of a person who was up there for all the wrong reasons. So they left this sheet, and it was basically all the rules and things that guide a person who maybe is not an English-speaking person to what they have to and what they don't have to answer. And it basically gave, here's the number that you call, and it'll be a Spanish-speaking, and they'll do this for you and that. And if they try to tell you that you have, you know, no rights on this and this, then you give us a call, and we'll do this. And these are just this continual breakdown as to what this person's rights were and what they didn't have. And then it also said, if you're one of those people who identifies as a different sex, you have the right then to ask for an opposite sex, or in this case, a same-sex person to pat you down and do that. So if Mike got arrested,
Wait a minute.
Knows how I put that off of him. If you got arrested, you could say, no, I identify as a lady today, and so I want a lady to pat me down. And they would have to
say so.
they would have to recognize that. I mean, it's just amazing what these poor jailers are having to go through at this point to deal with some of the obviously lower level.
They have one of the hardest jobs on a daily basis in the government, I think.
So all right, so we've got these people. We're chasing them around. We're hiring three new people.
Mm-hmm.
That's their focus. Just go around there and keep these people on the move and so on. I agree with you. They're going to get to a point where they say, you know what, I'm tired of being hassled. I'm going to go either somewhere else, or I'm going to find a place where it's in the shadows and I'm not going to get hassled. What about the beds, though? What are we going to do about this? We need these beds. Whether we are going to take over Sugar Pine up there in a big movement and start taking a lot of our lower security people up there. What if we can't get that? What other options do we have available to us?
In the immediate or long term? Because
both.
I think immediately that we could get in there and figure out how it is that we can possibly get, I'm going to say a handful more beds, but in my mind I'm thinking that we can get 20 to 25 more beds to get creative, to discuss, to bringing in. I think that you'll probably hear me talk a lot about collaboration because I like to work in groups. That must have been something that was very popular growing up in the 90s or something along those lines. That must have been like I'm going to say Common Core for the 90s, but that must have been that we worked a lot in groups. And so I very much so like bringing in people and putting our heads together. I've been spending a lot of time speaking with people who represent all sides of that issue. But I think that we can, even if we need to, and we're doing some of this now, but send out a handful of people to other counties. That saves us a little bit of money when we do that. I think that we can get 20 to 25. And then there are lots of people talking, and we'll see whether or not it happens. And I think, honestly, the thing that's really exciting for me is that people who feel very differently about all sides of all of these hot topics, who have been talking about, can we come up with some sort of sales tax long term? Now, that is a long term sort of thing. And maybe it is that we continue to have the jail that we have now, but we also build something else. To house maybe a different section of the population. And then maybe it sunsets and we have a certain percentage of that tax that stays to maintain. Because I think that overall, the stuff that, to sort of pivot, the stuff that I have dealt with and seen a lot in my experience on the CSAC in the city is that we historically don't do a very good job of long-term planning. We don't do a good job about saving. We build for what it is that we do long-term. I mean, for what it is that we have right now. Mm-hmm. And then we don't then have money in 20 years to replace whatever it is that is just not up to par with what we have going on. So whether that has to do with parks, whether that has to do with infrastructure, whether that has to do with jail, any of those sort of things. I think we have to start doing a better job of that savings. And there are other things that are smaller. I would love to see if we did something like bike registration. I think that's a great idea.
That's a good idea.
Whoever thought of that should be the city manager. he doesn't want to be the city manager. He just wants city manager's salary. So it was just.
I think that it would be, but I think that anytime that we set something like that up, even say hypothetically you set up a bike registration and it's $7 and $2 to $3 of that goes to pay the administration fee for somebody typing in all of those, all of the registration and on the back end. And then maybe $5 of that goes towards something that has to do with crime. Or maybe it goes something, and maybe it is something that the city gives towards local nonprofits who deal with some of those issues that we don't necessarily. Because it's not that the city or the county need to be really great in the mental health space or any of that. But we have other people that is their main gig, that we could financially funnel and support them. Mm-hmm. And they can tackle that. There are private sector percentage parts of the population who excel in those things. And so maybe we just funnel some of that.
And as a private sector solution, they wouldn't have CalPERS pension. And we wouldn't have to pay that. And just a thought. I don't know where that came from, but
you guys are onto something.
I think of a lot of this, guys. I think it's something that as we continue to develop ideas like Aaron's thrown out now, and some of the things that we've talked about in the past, I think they're gonna come out in such a way that it'll almost be like one solves the other, and it continually. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we're talking about basically two issues that we're having. The crime issue is a complete separate issue, but it's being exacerbated by the fact that we've got unfunded pension issues and debt issues and budget issues and so on. And the unfunded pension issue is being exacerbated by the crime issues because we can't. I mean, it's this vicious circle that we now find ourselves in. And we continually are going to push the limits of both when it comes to our ability to kind of embrace and react. And I think that's the part that a lot of people are now kind of at their wit's end with. And that is the fact that, you know what, no more studies, no more, you know, if you want to go out and look at, you know, what are the best practices for some of these other communities who are dealing with some of the same things. Chico mm-hmm. had some big issues. 2011, 2012, they finally said, enough is enough. And they brought in a reform city manager. All right. The reform city manager knew that they weren't going to be here for a long period of time. Their job was not to be friends, not to, you know, try to make allies, anything like that. It was to reform. And so right now, if you went through their breakdown as to what their employees are being paid, the highest paid person in that community, which is a bigger community than us, by the way, and has a bigger budget, is $170,000. And that's their chief of police. Nobody gets paid more than that. How many people do we have? For those of you who are out there researching, you can go out to a number of different sites. City of Reading site actually has their new salaries up, but you can go out to readingtownhall.com. Tell me how many people make more than $170,000 a year. I think you're going to be very surprised. If you're out there and you're just wanting to practice your numbers, go out there and count how many people are over six figures, 100,000. I think you're going to be amazed. And that's just in salary, not counting benefits and so on. We have basically a situation where we have so many people being paid so much. And they may be wonderful people, and a lot of them are. Actually, obviously, we know them. Mm-hmm. We're related to them. They're our neighbors and so on. But quite frankly, we're at a point where we just can't afford it, guys. So we're basically at that point. Where we're going to have to change things. But before we change things, we're going to have to take a break. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR. Vince Stevenson, our special guest host today, in for Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff, will return after this. Now back to Vince Stevenson, our special guest host today on We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us, and you're listening live on AM 1460 KCNR.
All right, I'm in the studio with a bunch of people who have no idea where that song came from. They don't even know who that group was. It's sad, just sad, but that's all right. We're going to give them a benefit of the doubt for just a moment. Hey, we're talking about a lot of different things. What?
Who was it?
Oh, my God.
The oldie but goodie?
Is that
what they call them?
Yeah.
It was that group McCartney was in before Wings.
Yeah, before Wings. Yeah. But it's a very appropriate, considering our community needs help. And we're trying to get it. And we have some people in the studio who I think they have some things that will help. They have some things, ideas that will bring us to that next level. We're talking solutions right now. But as we're talking solutions, I want to throw out a couple challenges to you. One, go out to ShastaCountyRecall.com. Come by and sign the petitions. When you go out to ShastaCountyRecall.com or Transparency CrowdPack, go out to CrowdPack.com and search Shasta. You'll see beautiful pictures of Francie Sullivan and Christian Schrader out there with a big old recall right next to them. And it'll make you feel good about giving. It'll make you feel good about making an adjustment. Remember, it's nothing personal. It's just that we need some people with some different skill sets to come in and solve our issues. And then we can turn it over to those who want to feel good and feel like they're in a safer place inside the downtown rather than inside their own living room, all those wonderful statements that they've made. Well, and don't think it's a homegrown issue. The other issue is, as we move forward, I want you guys to become more aware. So I want you to go out to, in this case, ReadingTownHall.com, and I want you to look at what are the salaries of some of these people. I've heard a little person came through the studio and told us that our parks manager was number 92. So she's making roughly $142,000, something like that, has received four raises within an 18-month period over the last year and a half, two years. And quite frankly, I mean, that's, you know, it is what it is. And so now we're at a point where we say, all right, so who would do that job? If she's number 92 on the list of people, so there's 92 people or 91 people who have been being paid more than what she's making at $142,000, you know what? How much would you require to do that job? So go out there to ReadingTownHall.com, and take a look at what these people are getting paid, and how many of you would do it for half? Give us a call, get on the chat pack. You know, basically let us know, would you do it for half? I mean, would that be enough for you? But let's talk about some other solutions while we're at this. We've got Dale. Dale, give us a shout out. What's going on, buddy?
Good morning. I would definitely do the job for half, and I think I won the lottery.
All right, which job do you want for half?
The parks director. Well, any of those $200,000 a year jobs, you know. I'd do it for $100,000. Think I've, you know, like I said, won the lottery.
Uh-huh. Well, we've already saved $42,000. So, well, where else can we make some cuts?
But solutions, you know, solutions are, you know, this is part of the solution. Getting rid of the dead weight at City Hall that does not want to look forward.
Well, let's talk about dead weight real quick, Dale. Chico basically took, I think they had 13 different divisions. That was a number that was thrown out, and they went down to five. Okay, and so I had somebody.
They also did pay freezes.
There you go. And so I had somebody say, "Well, what's the advantage of that?" Well, you get to cut out 8 of the managers, so you get to cut out all the support staff and all the things that go along with that. So, I mean, that plays a huge role in this. What do you think about that? What do you think about just cutting down the number of managers and the number of divisions? Do you think that'll help?
Oh, we've got to, and the sad fact is that these two council members, they just cannot say no to raises. Every one that's came up before them, they vote yes on. And we just simply cannot afford it as we're headed towards bankruptcy, as you spoke about earlier.
Isn't that crazy? Where I came up with the simple idea of kind of breaking it down is I saw what other communities are doing, but I also saw what's going on in our school districts. We have all these different school districts that are broken into these tiny little things. Well, each one of them needs an administration. They need superintendents. They need all these different things. And quite frankly, we have a lot of school districts right now that are actually deficit spending currently. We have some that are over $1.5 million, $2 million per year that are deficit spending. So, I mean, we've got a real big issue when it comes to that. You know,
yes, we do, and that's probably why charter schools are doing so well.
Yeah, they've learned to compete. How about that? So, thanks, Dale.
Have a great day.
Thanks, bud. All right, so guys, what are our ideas? We've got bike registration. We're cutting down, which I think the bike registration thing, not just because I happen to be one of the people that pushed it, but because, I mean, it's real simple. I think it'll give the law enforcement some teeth. It'll give them the ability to look at some of the bikes that are being stolen and where they came from and who's got them. It'll get rid of some of these little backpack little tweakers that are running the streets. It'll help in a lot of different ways. But what are some other ideas out there?
I got one for you.
Yep.
And it just came up yesterday when I was driving with my wife. When you drive by the bus stops, on occasion you'll see certain people there that don't look like they're waiting for the bus, who have taken up residence.
Shelter.
So perhaps instead of using general fund money, you could find some RABA money to hire one person whose job would be to go around and discuss the situation with those people and find out if they're really waiting for it or not. It would allow you to increase your law enforcement support without taking it out of the general fund. And I would think, I haven't looked at the RABA budget, but you would think they could find a warm body to go and do that.
Yeah.
What about using volunteers?
Okay.
Bring the volunteers into the police department.
Well, and right now it seems to be a lot of the most impactful things we're doing outside of what RPD has been doing in the last few months. I won't say it's because of the recall, but it's because of the recall. the simple fact is honest. Maybe it's the volunteers that are making the big impacts now. So, I mean, your idea of using them, I mean, that's what do you think, Erin?
I think that there are lots of groups in town who want to do some work. I happen to have someone who hangs out quite often at the bus stop in front of mine. And I think the thing that I usually think about, not only is it that it's someone's like entire house in front of my place of business, but is the aspect of I always feel really bad when there is someone who actually needs our public transportation, who needs to be sitting in that area waiting, and they don't feel comfortable because there is someone who sort of has taken up residence, and just like you wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable going into someone else's home, whether they're squatting in your own, a renter or something along those lines that you're wanting to kick out. So that's the part for me where I really struggle in that. And I think that there are lots of groups that could do that. I think in general, we could take a very good look at what our transportation section, what our public works section looks like. I think that we need probably a couple. I actually think that we need some people who are more specific in certain areas of transportation planners, those sort of people who can go out and get us some of these really big grants, so that we could do some of that work. I mean, there's a lot of potential there, but I think that we need some people who are a little bit more specialized in certain areas where it is that we are lacking.
Well, we definitely need to make that impact, and whether it be with some grants that we haven't had access to already, or finding room within the RABA budget. When it came to the veterans, it was very simple. We have veterans who need to get to their appointments and need to do these things. We just had a fundraiser and raised, $12,000, $15,000 to buy those bus passes so those veterans could get to their appointments and so on. There's got to be a way. And right now, the fact that they – basically throw it out to the community and say, you need to endure this. You need to basically, you know, overcome it yourself, and we're not going to help, or we're not going to do anything proactively to address it. It's unacceptable. And so now it becomes, we need to recapture those along with other the riverbanks. The fact that right now the federal government's not playing a role in helping us on the riverbanks is amazing to me. They pass laws that say every waterway is theirs. Mm-hmm. So if it's yours, then come deal with it. We want to be able to bring trout fishermen or people floating down the river or whatever down through there and not see naked people, you know, bathing in it or defecating or doing these things. We don't want that kind of show for people coming from out of the community. So quite frankly, they should play a part. Why isn't public health playing a part? They know that what's going on in San Diego is going to happen here. Mm-hmm. So where are they? Why aren't they playing a role in getting out there and getting their budgets involved in dealing with some of the stuff that's going on in these encampments and so on? Or, in this case, in the bus stops. Mm-hmm. This is stuff that they should be involved in, too. And if we're going to send an officer out, then they get to tag along and they get to go out with them. I mean, we're at a point now, guys, where the people who have been involved are exhausted. They are doing everything they possibly can. Imagine each one of you are a colonel in the Marine Corps and you're having to look out for your troops. Well, you know what? Those troops are exhausted. They're doing everything they can to fight what they've got. They're exhausting their budgets. They're exhausting their manpower. And some of these other groups need to now be involved. So who are some other people besides public health, besides the federal government when it comes to waterways? Who are some other people who should be involved in this fight?
Can I speak to the fact that I think one of the things we need to first do before that is to have some better leadership that's saying, let's leave all of our stuff at the door and come in and all of us get around the table. Because I think that's part of the reason why it is that there are different sections of the government and different sections of the community and different leaders, and all of those people are not sitting around one table. They're all working in silos. And I think that first that comes from people who are leaders in the community, whether those are city council people or whether those are managers or county supervisors or what have you, or various just citizens who have some weight to say, let's set aside everything that has come before and say, we all have the same concerns. We all have the same why. So let's just come together around the table and decide how it is that you can do what public works does best. You can do what public health does best. You can do what the sheriff does best. Any of these California waterways, any of those, that we have to be asking all of them. But it takes a leader in the community to reach out to all of those people and to say, like, hey, I need your help.
Absolutely. And I think that's a situation, guys, where we're all going to have to realize it's going to take compromise. It's going to take everyone realizing that you're at the table. You're not going to get everything you want. But in the meantime, we're at a stage where I think it's becoming obvious that the people that are now starting to speak, that you're hearing their voices, like Mike and Aaron and so on, they're going to be the new leaders. They're going to be the people actually doing the things necessary to make this happen. But we're going to talk to Billy Bob, if you're going to hang on, after the break. And right now, we're going to get it done. Hang in there, guys. A few more minutes.
A reminder, you're listening to With the People on AM 1460 KCNR and online at kcnr1460.com. Ben Stevenson, our special guest, will be back to wrap up, our guest host, that is, will be back to wrap it up in a moment. Now back to our special guest on We the People, our special guest host, once again, Vince Stevenson.
All right, guys. Hey, let's real quick, if Billy Bob's still hanging on. Sorry, Billy Bob. If you're still there, give us a yell, brother.
Still here.
All right. Hey, what do you got?
Hey, buddy. Hey, great show. You haven't let down the high bar of the programming at KNCR. But
I appreciate that.
You've done a great job. And all I wanted to say is that your comments on the city council and the ineptness of these people to understand the problem that they're in and the demise of this community, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, shit, we're deep in debt. I mean, come on. And they don't even get it. They don't even get it. So anyway, I think we ought to recall all five of them. Let alone two of them. So that's my say. I'll let you go.
Thank you, Billy Bob. Hey, yeah, let's take it one step at a time, though. Let's pick on the low hanging fruit and kind of go from there. When it comes to a couple things here, guys, I agree with Billy Bob in the sense that it doesn't feel like we're truly embracing our issues yet, and our issue being that we're broke. We're basically on the premise of a deficit spending and so on. I heard the conversation that was going on at City Council saying, you know what, let's sell the old police station to McConnell, and then immediately it went to, well, how are we going to spend that money? Well, you know what? When you're broke, you don't get to spend the money. It's already spent, and that's part of the problem. So, I mean, I think we've got some movement that needs to happen. So I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds. Quick, what are your ideas? What other things would you like people to start to plant some seeds? What would you like them to start considering?
I would love something that doesn't take any money but would help at least enhance quality of life issues is if we could do a better job. We do some of this already, but if we could do a better job of organizing some of those things, whether they're like moms with stroller walk or they're like programmed toddler time in the park, some of those sort of things, the more and more we can bring light to some of those areas that people don't feel comfortable, the more that darkness will leave.
Okay.
And so some of those things don't cost any money, but we could do a better job of advertising what it is. The more we can bring people in, the more we can spur economic growth. I would love to see, and I've had people laugh at me. I don't know why, because this works in every other city. But I would like to see every county supervisor and every city council person at least once a month sitting down and making cold calls and building relational equity with other businesses that we want to have here. And even if you, mm-hmm. maybe you open it up, maybe Barry asks every ass and posts like a public poll that you can get on and you say, these are the, and we find the 10 businesses that, and companies that as a city that we would like to come here. And then as city council people, we start asking them, what do we need to do to get you here? And that doesn't mean that we have to break code. And that doesn't mean we have to do that. It just means that we have to be talking.
Perfect. Mike?
The lack of trust and lack of transparency are directly related with the current city and some with the county. And because the only way they can make money is by raising taxes or increasing business, and you're going to need money to fund a jail and some of these other mm-hmm. things, which everybody acknowledges, if they could increase the transparency and increase the feeling of, yes, you're on my side, and the transparency would go a long way. Here's an one. They had a big fight before about the public comment at the beginning of the meeting, public comment at the end of the meeting.
Yes.
Put it at the beginning and the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if you come at the beginning, you can get it done. And then
the rest of them will move on.
If they come to the end, get it done.
I like it. Robert.
Mm-hmm. Ideas for me, I think volunteers. I like to stick with that one. We talked about Reading versus Anderson earlier. Anderson has volunteer police department. They've got a bunch of volunteers there. Why can't Reading do that?
It's working in other areas.
Yeah, exactly. The more feet on the ground, we would be able to bring light to plenty of places, mm-hmm. push the darkness away, get people mm-hmm. moving, make them uncomfortable, and it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of today and for the discussion. If there is something that you would like to get out there, please contact one of these people, hopefully very late at night, and wake them up and let them know that enough is enough. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, and may we all come together to make Reading a better place. Go out to Shasta County, recall.com or go out to CrowdPack, let them know, or get down here and get your signature done. Bob, thank you for being everything that you are to this station. And thanks to Aaron and Bill for letting us have this spot. Again, thanks a ton, and do what you can.
All right, thank you, Vince Stevenson. This is KCNR, Shasta Redding. Be listening for next week's edition of We the People. Aaron and Bill will be back, and we'll have special guest Chuck Floyd talking about the developing A1 Brothers scandal.